Welcome to Wisdom Personified, Conversations with Dudumsomi, a passionate and relentless pursuit of exploring how individuals use good judgment in everyday life, both in their personal and professional lives.
True wisdom is often found not in the voice that leads, but in the silence that listens. And sometimes, even the listener deserves to be heard. Today is a truly special moment, not just for the conversation we're about to have, but for me personally. I have the incredible honor of sitting with someone I've admired for over a decade, a woman whose leadership is gentle but unshakable, whose wisdom is not just spoken, but lived. For years, she's been the one asking the questions, the one creating space for others to rise, building platforms for others to learn, the one guiding us through the Wisdom Personified platform with grace, insight, and intention. But today, for the first time ever, founder and host of Wisdom Personified, Dudumsomi, is the one sharing her wisdom right here on her own platform, and I get to be the one asking her the questions. We met in 2010, two young women chosen together with 33 other global changemakers to participate in the U.S. Fortune Mentorship Program under the U.S. State Department. We were mentored by Fortune 500 women who were full of vision, purpose, and fire. And in that experience, Dudu and I began a friendship that grew into a sisterhood. Since then, I've watched her build, I've spoken at her mentorship programs, I've spoken in her leadership programs for CEOs, I've been a guest on this same podcast, I've sat with her in Durban with her mother, I've laughed with her best friend Dawn, I've seen the woman behind the public role, and let me tell you, it's even more extraordinary. Dudu is the CEO of Busara Leadership Partners, a boutique strategic advisory and consulting firm whose expertise is to facilitate the development and effectiveness of leaders and entrepreneurs to achieve their desired goals and reshaping leaders across Africa. She's the host of this very show, Wisdom Personified. She also founded the Dudumsomi Foundation in 2016. She also founded the Dudumsomi Foundation in 2016 for nurturing the next generation of leaders, impacting the trajectory of women and youth through a structured mentorship and leadership development programs. She's a leadership expert and strategist who has led hundreds of bespoke leadership, board, and entrepreneurship development programs. Her academic profile reflects the same excellence she brings to her work. She holds a Bachelor of Arts honors from the University of Natal, Durban, a postgraduate diploma in corporate governance from RAU, a program for management development from Gibbs, and a master's in business administration from Gibbs. She's also a Laureate Award recipient from the University of Pretoria as a Gibbs alumnus, a fellow at the Institute of Directors, and an independent non-executive on several boards, including the South African Reserve Bank. And above all, she's a quiet force who leads with intelligence, compassion, integrity, and soul. We will go deep into legacy, power, purpose, and the sacred parts of leadership we don't always name. For me, this is more than an interview. It's a conversation. It's a reckoning. It's a return. Dudu, welcome to Wisdom Personified, your own podcast. Today, you're on the guest seat.
Yay, thank
you're the
you.
Voice we've been waiting to
is
hear.
Is it a hot seat? Should I?
I don't know about that. We'll see about that. So let's take it from the beginning. Please paint a picture for us. How were your early days, the young Dudumsomi? Give it to us as you remember it.
Well, I actually have four names, but I shall not share them.
Please, no.
Shall not share the four names.
Fine.
But I started using Dudu at three.
3 years.
I think it was 2 or 3, yeah. My grandfather passed away, and my grandmother, Umam Loi, gave me Dudu because she said, her comforter.
Oh, that's amazing.
So that's how it came about. And I really treasure this name because I hope I bring comfort, even when I'm making you uncomfortable.
I can speak for myself. Yeah. You do bring comfort.
But I was born in Mutu. Mama was training as a nurse. She literally gave birth to me and took me to my dad and plucked me with my father in Newcastle where they were staying. So I found out recently that she didn't even have time to breastfeed me. But anyway, moving on. So I was actually my baby years. I was with my father and grandmother. And I love that about my mother. You know, she lost her parents when she was young. So already at 16, she was on her own. But she had this determination that she wanted a particular life for her family and herself. And she luckily met a husband who was willing to support that journey. So when she gave birth and left me with him, actually created a lifetime bond because my father is my everything, you know. I have two loves of my life, my father and my mother. And then the other little love of my life was my sister. So in my family, we were two. I have half-sisters, but from my mother, it was Stelo and I. I lost my sister, but she's always with me. So really a small family. We moved to Maritzburg when we were young. I started school at 4 because the creche didn't have space, and I started reading early. Baba, baba, black sheep, heavy animal was my favorite rhyme. And so when they moved to Pietermaritzburg and couldn't find a creche, they had a friend, Ms. Vundla. Ms. Vundla, I think, Vundla, who kind of said, let's put her, is it sub A at that time? If she swims, she stays. If she drowns, we take her out. So, that's how my life started. Knowledge, information has always been part of my life, even as a child.
And being raised by your father, how was that like? Because I was also raised by my father, and there's certain traits that people associate, especially with girls who are raised by their fathers.
We love our fathers to death, that's for sure. The one thing I remember about my father, when I walked in the room, his eyes actually lit up. I was talking to a relative of mine who recently got a baby daughter, and he said, now I understand your father. I now understand your father. But not to say my mom was absent. She was training, came back home, I should think. But the one thing that is significant about my father is that, you know, when a man is raising a child, people in the neighborhood want to support, which I think when it's just a woman on their own, I don't think people rally. Mm. But our next door neighbor, I think it was Mom Maggie. Mm. She used to like putting me on her back, which is still a place of comfort because I'm very much a solitary kind of person, which is a shocker to most people. They don't know that, that I really spend a lot of time. So I spent a lot of time on her back. It was the only way I could go to sleep. So my father found ways.
To get support from the community. Support.
But I remember one time, he literally bathed me and I was sleeping. He bathed me, and I was older by that time, possibly, 8, 9, and I was sleeping. Took me into my, and I didn't wake up. That's just the relationship.
How close you
two are. And I remember being fascinated the next day, even now, the fact that I even remember it. And I was like, how did I get into bed? And he says, no, bath you. So it was just my space of comfort and peace. That's what my dad did for me. So even when we used to sit together, we could just be in silence and be very comfortable. Or walk down the street arm in arm.
Yeah.
So being brought up by a man really makes you very comfortable in your skin, like confident. You know you're loved. You know what love is. Yeah. So when you're in the world and you meet young men, you know
you
that
reference.
Is not love. That is not love.
You have reference.
So that, I think, is what the gift was from a mother by keep, you know, placing me with my father and what my father then did to me.
I love that.
You know, I just love that bond that we have forever.
And, you know, it's really interesting that you speak about your father and your sister. in the present tense.
Yeah.
Please tell me a little bit about that, because I find that so beautiful. Even though they have passed,
yeah,
you carry them with you in everything that you do.
And also, their passing for me is no longer sad.
Mm.
You know, it's just another phase. And they will just always be with me. The nice thing about growing up in the Msomi household that I grew up in, death was always part of the conversation, which most people find strange, even now. I've had this conversation. My mother's still alive, and we speak about it, and you can see our help. Like
me too. The first time I heard you talk about it,
yeah,
I was like, okay.
Yes. So it was integrated in terms of life.
Mm.
We just know that it's a different phase. You're in a different place. But my sister passed away 7th of December 2006,
yeah,
and my father 6 months later, 23rd of June 2007. And my sister died in my arms. I always say it was the most excruciating pain, but the most amazing feeling, because I was where I should have been.
How old were you then?
I just finished my MBA.
Wow.
I had literally, you know, when you like give up your life for 2 years, the Gibbs MBA doesn't play. you really give up your life.
Mm.
And you know, you have timelines like, oh, at 30, blah, 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 I must have done whatever. And November, I thought, yay, done. I had actually booked a ticket to go to the Netherlands. My friend Sneen Tlantla, who's now Makakula, was living in the Netherlands, and we had planned to be there for Christmas.
Yeah.
So my flight was really on the 16th of December. And my sister didn't have the plan to have me being out of the country. So on the 7th, she passed. But why they're still with me is because they're not gone.
Mm.
They're just in a different form. So my sister's birthday is the 10th of July. I celebrate it. I have things that I commemorate on that day. My dad is born on the 11th of October. Shares the birthday with another favorite human being of Zimi. So there was a time she used to feel guilty about celebrating. I was like, when you know our family, you will celebrate. I'm glad you're born on that day. And so when I get gifts, you know, people laugh.
Mm.
You know, when I have things happen that are special, whether it's a project, business, or anything, I'm like, it's a gift from my sister, a gift from my father. So they still integrate it.
No, I see that, and I've witnessed that, because I've spent time with you at your home in Durban.
Yeah.
And you could sense and see that.
Yeah, it's not a painful thing, and the pictures are there. But we don't hold them like we don't want to let go.
Mm.
They're just in a different phase.
Was it difficult, the fact that it happened 6 months apart from you losing your sister to you losing your father? And how did it alter or shape your life?
I think, I must say, interestingly enough, after my sister passed, around 2 months later, I met somebody I dated who was born in 1966, the very same year my sister was born.
Mm.
The day my father passed away, the day in the morning when we got the call, 10:30 in the morning, because my mother, for some reason, had delayed going to the hospital. We were supposed to go to the hospital, and she kept on delaying. The phone came, phone call came. I said, oh, I shouldn't be with him. And I realized what had happened, that he was there to save me, because I would have gone mad. You know, like when you lose a sibling in your arms, he like distracted me. And he had such characteristics in his character
that you needed at that particular
moment. That was so self-absorbed in terms of him being a person that distracted me, that I couldn't, because I would have sunk. I literally only mourned the death of both my sister and my father about a year after. And I was attending a meeting of quite a prominent person whom I will not mention, but I was walking out the door. I got to the door and I couldn't move. I could not move. I just like...
A year later.
Because remember, I'm the only child now. I have a mother. I also have to... I'm also a doer. In crises, I'm very calm and I execute. And so... I think the universe said, you have to mourn. Even if you guys embrace as this family death, you kind of have to mourn.
And I guess it's part of that phases of grief.
Yeah, so. I could not move. I stood there. I remember grabbing the phone and calling my partner. At that time, I was at Ascentis, which was a consulting firm, and Ricardo Giletti was the CEO. I was MD. And I said, I can't move. Can my meetings be cancelled? He said, whatever you need. I just cried. I remember my first love, whom I also will not name because he's a prominent person. I called. He left the boardroom, wherever he was. Tickets were bought for me to go home to Durban. He sat with me for 3 hours, nonstop. And he just held me, did not speak. Held me for 3 hours. I got onto the flight. The woman looked at my face and upgraded me. She said, go and sit in the chair. She could see that
you were not
whatever
right.
was happening yes. in my face.
Yeah.
And she put me, I usually don't like the emergency, 1F or 1A, I don't like them, she said. And I sat there and I cried throughout. My mother said she did not think I'll ever come out of it. I was allowed the grace, Ricardo Giletti, I will never forget.
Mm.
I did not work for about a month or two. I could not move.
Wow.
And
That's a very
and
hard.
The grace of humans around you to allow you to grieve and to still have a salary, which most of us don't have the luxury of having.
No, not at all.
You know, so they rescued me. But it still did, I still not did not come out of it. I couldn't, I think, 2018 I was diagnosed with parathyroid disease and other stuff. I think that's the time some systems in my body, because I could not, before I used to love exercise, 10 minutes I'll be gone. Like, if I found myself being joyful, because you know me, I love laughing and smiling.
You're always joyous.
Yeah, I will feel like I'm betraying.
It took a long time.
It took, I literally wrote an article 2013.
Mm.
I can remember the date because one of our favorite Wisdom Personified episodes was with Temba Gamete. He's an actuary. For some reason, that man is just, his brain doesn't work like that. I remember I had written this paper called Coming Out of the Fog, and I sent it to him.
Mm.
You know, that was my reflection. That's how I felt. So imagine, she died 2-6. My father 2-7, I felt that I only came out of the flood 2013.
Wow.
So, and everybody who sees you and the things you do thinks
they
you...
They can't resonate.
You met me
with
in
that.
2010.
I had
you,
no idea.
You had no idea.
I had no idea.
Because we can still live. You can survive. You can thrive, even in grief. But you know yourself that this is not the epitome of who Dudu is.
Mm.
But I allowed myself that grace.
And I love that the journey has brought you to a place where you feel at peace with it.
Yeah.
And that I picked up. That was something that
and
I
And you can
up.
Be of comfort to other people to say, a friend of mine lost her father last year. And I don't sugarcoat it. It's not going to... You're going to be feeling this the rest of your life. It's just going to have its own ebbs and flows. But you're going to be fine. And then you're going to start finding ways of celebrating and honoring them. And they're going to be proud of the life you're living.
Yeah.
That's the thing you can look forward to.
And now you're taking care, you're the primary caregiver.
The love
to
of
your
my life.
Beautiful, beautiful aging mother. And I see how I see it because I have a first row seat.
Yeah.
You know, I witness how you balance your career, you know, your leadership role, but you are ever so present for your mother.
Yeah. The nice thing is that that has always been. The one thing I realize, especially when your parents start losing their memory, is how precious it is to have given them the time long before that.
Mm.
So long before, I remember even when I started my career in Saatchi & Saatchi in advertising, she used to come to the office with me because I used to be so busy. So I used to invite her. So anybody who knows me, I integrate my work life and home life. Mm-hmm. There's no artificial boundary. So even at work, they will see her there. My CEO, William Leach, will make her tea, coffee, whatever. She was part of my life. In my events, when I started my own company, she'll be there. When I used to be on, I was CEO of IPM at some point, the Institute of People Management, she'll attend conferences with me. Mm-hmm. So I have seen her life from when she was younger to now. So the journey with her as a professional, looking after an aging parent, nobody talks about that.
Yeah.
Nobody talks about, we soon talk about, many of us get blood pressure issues. Mm. And the.
We talk about raising children. We talk about many things, but the point where we have to be the caregivers for our parents that means.
Yeah. And my mother is not a child. Mm. I will never, ever say the way she behaves as a child. She's always a parent. And most people find it strange because I'm saying, even though she's aging, she's still very much aware. Mm-hmm. And I'm still very much aware of her authority and her power and her position. So there are things where I am now allowing her to lean on me, but she's still my mother. And there is nothing in this world that I will not do to make sure that her aging process is with dignity. And she feels love and does, because they feel so anxious, because they do not know how we're going to treat them. Are we going to move them to a home? Are you abusing their finances? What are you doing?
Or are we even holding grudges for some of the things that they have done in the past?
Yeah.
And we've seen it. We've seen it in our society where, you know, adults are looking back at their parents and blaming them for things that had happened many, many years, and they have a broken relationship. What wisdom can you share around, you know, people going through such journeys?
Do not, I always tell people, live consciously. Mm. This is my thing. Every second of your life, so you don't have to wait until the future. Mm. Live consciously. The one thing I always have done with both my parents is to have conversations about how I'm feeling, about how their behavior is impacting from when I was a child.
So it's been consistently.
It has been. Some of them have been painful. I remember when I was young, and my mother is very much a go-getter, and she's very much a community person. And that part I have absorbed from her and I enjoy, which sometimes is not good, because when you're running a business, your entire focus shouldn't really be CSI, but so she has always been very much focused on the educational part. So she was tutor, then became lecturer in the nursing environment. And on weekends, she also then used to teach as well. So when do you have time for mother? And then when she was practicing, when she was still a nurse, Christmas and New Year, she was always working. The one comfort she got from my mother was the financial. Mm-hmm. She was a good financial provider. And I remember, I think I was 14, we had a conversation. And I said, I need you. Are you aware that if you do not have any financial contribution in my life, you're contributing nothing?
You had that conversation.
She looked at me in shock.
Wow.
But did I tell you that my name is Comforter?
Yes.
So even when I am causing discomfort in you, I'm hoping I'm helping you towards, you know, whatever.
It's how you say it.
Not always, even the message. So that kind of conversation, my father, we traveled together for 2 weeks in 2000 around the country. And I needed to talk to him about certain aspects of how he as a father showed up and wanting to know why did he show up that way.
Yeah. And I think those are very difficult conversations.
Oh, so, it was beautiful.
No, I'm saying generally for most people, we keep it inside. We feel like we cannot talk to our parents. We end up holding grudges. Yeah. It affects our relationship with them in the long term. So I think that's a very practical
way. And it creates disease.
It does.
Dis-ease.
It does.
And for me, I may not always be the picture of health always, but where I know that emotions create dis-ease, I cope with those emotions and I tackle them. So even with my sister, a few days before she died, she called and said, "Are you angry with me?" And I said, "No, we are not fighting. I'm not happy with what decision you're making now, but I respect you and I love you. This journey is your journey. I cannot live your life for you." So she said, "Okay, because when I'm gone, I don't want you to play." Remember, she was not, there was nothing that was saying she's going to die.
She was saying,
but we were brought up that way.
And I've experienced it with you.
We were brought up that way.
Last year, we had made a couple of plans to meet. We were not able to meet. And you called me and you said, "Friend, what is going on? Every plan we make, things are not working out." And we addressed it and we moved on.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very important lesson, you know.
With everybody.
Whether it's our children.
Do it. Don't keep things in. There is so much that life can give us if you have confidence in other human beings. I think sometimes we work so much from fear. I love.
And you say it from love.
Yes, like, I always say it.
You say it from a place of love.
And I mean it in love. If it creates hurt in you, I want you to tell me and I will apologize and I will tell you that is not my intention.
Yes.
But with everyone. I remember there was one time at lunchtime when we were doing our MBA because we used to have time. And a lot of us were talking about our siblings. Mm. And I hate the term black sheep because we kind of say, oh, the black sheep of the family. I don't like that because there is no black sheep. Mm. We're all different and are diverse. And then I remember telling them that stop fighting reality. Mm. If you can see that you have a sibling that is not responsible, not whatever, you kind of have to start putting them in your budget.
Mm.
You don't tell them, but put it in your budget because ultimately, at some point when they call, we respond.
Yeah.
So you make sure you put them in the budget.
So it doesn't become a problem.
It doesn't become a problem. These are our, I always say, whether I chose to be in this world or not, I don't know how I do believe we do choose. And I chose the family I did. I chose my sibling. There is a reason. If her character is in a particular way, I need to say, what am I learning from her?
Mm.
And you know, when you spend a lot of time banging your head and trying to make things different from what they are, that is a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Just the physical part of doing it. But that's where suffering is. Yeah. You need to embrace what life is, accept it, not be a pushover. You still have to have agency in what you're doing, but be strategic and plan for it. Because some of us are never going to leave our siblings in the street. We're never going to leave our parents You decide and say, I'm going to make sure that... The one thing I used to say to my sister is because she loved socializing, but I was the responsible one. So I was seen as a snob, I was also the quieter one, so it really doesn't help when you're quiet and shy, but also serious. But I then was able to give her the license to be the social butterfly. Yeah. And I used to say, I will buy you an apartment and give her that comfort that she can be who she is. And I will still take care of it.
I love it because what you're saying is you essentially accept the people around you.
Yeah.
And you mold yourself to live in that acceptance in a way that is conditionally loving.
And I enjoy them. I mean, we were just chatting about the diversity of my networks.
Mm.
Like I have beauty queens, I have like actuaries, I have like amazing humans, like different disciplines, different countries.
And I like that you're talking about different disciplines in different countries.
Yeah.
Because I want to talk to you about your work now, Dudu. Mm. You have...
Do we have to?
Yes, we have to. You are one of the pioneers, in my opinion, of doing business as an African, as a black woman from South Africa, doing business across Africa. You have built a beautiful Pan-African network. You've always interacted, you know, with leaders and associates from across the continent, from way back when. How has it been for you? And what did you see early enough?
I think coming from a family that is very proud of being African. We grew up very proud of being African and understanding our role in the world. That it does not help me being successful and being unique as Dudum Somi, that when the world sees me, they see me as an African person. So whatever I do represents, poorly or well, the African. My mother, when she was younger, went to Kenya. I think it was 1985.
I saw the drum.
Yeah, the drum she
the
brought
beautiful
from Kenya.
Drum, yes.
And the story she came back with. So, you know, from a young age, you understand that this continent is my home. I also had cousins who are from Mozambique. So going to Mozambique, you felt like you're at home. And also when I started working, I worked for Saatchi & Saatchi, which is a global network. And Victor Johnson in Nigeria, and Kweku Hansa, I think, in Ghana. So I just grew up understanding African
business.
Yes, and also with their upbringing. So I've always been deliberate about establishing networks on the continent, and I've been privileged enough to be able to have access. So when I land in Kenya or Tanzania, I have a sister. When I land in Nigeria, I have a sister. So, and the one thing we're still doing in piecemeal is projects there. There is still room for us to really do business as African women, as African people cross-border in a more deliberate way. But I think it's growing.
And you know why this topic is very important, especially today when there is so much change happening in the world, you know, the geopolitical shift that is going on. And I've always been very curious, especially, you know, after moving here to South Africa. One of the biggest investors, African investors, in the rest of Africa is South Africa. But it's South African conglomerates and, you know, big businesses that are driven by, you know, a lot of the white South Africans. There's hardly much happening.
Haven't you just, like, conglomerates already talks to about access to capital? But so, let's not undermine
I'm not. Yeah. So my point is, from 15 years ago, you already were doing things on the continent, right? And we're not seeing that moving quick enough. What do you think should be done to accelerate that?
I think we're all doing it in our own little ways. But it's about networks, isn't it? Because sometimes you go into new countries either going through the back of government or back of other businesses. And us as small businesses, how do we do that?
Where do you start?
Yeah. So in... I know we both have friends who are very focused on the Pan-African networks. So when you start maybe going through associations, you see, I am very comfortable being a sole human in that journey. There are people who do need organizations and associations to
and
help.
Networks to reach that,
To be able to do that. And I am aware of a number of people doing business on the continent, but they're very quiet about it. You know, they're into infrastructural investments and other, but it's very quiet. But in terms of just an ordinary woman, we do need networks. And we know that we have like...
So there's African Women in Business
and Womenomics. Womenomics.
And there are actually quite a number of platforms.
Yes.
So, and I like that you've said it. It's about how do you enter new markets and access those opportunities. And there's still more to be done.
And you have an incubator.
I have an incubator across
Yes.
now
and
almost 10 countries.
So imagine the incubators here can now interact, which in the past they couldn't.
It was a challenge. Yeah. But now more than ever, we need to do that. Which brings me to my next question, since we're talking about women accessing networks across Africa. Women leadership. Dudu, you are doing incredible work, right? From mentoring young girls through your foundations to building strategic platforms for CEOs and entrepreneurs to building platforms for wisdoms for the rest of us to access. That's a lot of leadership work, right? As a woman, are there still obstacles in today's world that you think are hindering us from accessing more opportunities?
There'll always be because we create them in our minds. Mm. You know,
our minds.
Yes.
I like that.
There will always be because things like patriarchy are promoted by both females and males. Mm. So while us as women are the ones that also perpetuate it, we are also putting obstacles in our own way. But I will not undermine the fact that it takes courage and sacrifice. Mm. You have to know that to create a different way of the world and the way of being, we have to take the knocks. So as women, we have to decide how seriously we want transformation in terms of power relations and power dynamics to change. So some of us are sometimes seen as, is that the risk I want to take in terms of whether you are single or whether when you do this kind of work, no husband is going to, like, allow this, you know, kind of thing. But we've come a long way. A lot of partners, I feel, when I look at my friends and who are couples, they're doing it together. Mm. They are supportive, but it's also the mind. For me, as an African person, I understand that perpetuating my own oppression is in the mind. Mm. You know that story of the elephant.
Yes.
That as a child, and it's attached to a stake, it tries and struggles to move. And over time, even when it's grown and it can actually break free, it doesn't. Because
so it's the conditioning.
It does not know that it's now liberated. A lot of our condition as women is because we're not aware of our power.
So if for the women who are listening and watching us today, what would be the message? Some of us may not even know that we are in that space where we have created a boundary for ourselves.
Mm. It's a tough one because your circumstances sometimes inform. You do not want to. The one thing you will notice about the many things that I do, I tend not to tell people what to do. Mm. I tend to do things, and if I'm inspiring you to follow whichever way, then to do it, because we all have different situations. Mm. But what I can say is that you have to believe that the world you want, you can create, whatever that is. And the fact that is, with every choice and action, there are consequences, even unintended consequences. Mm. Whatever those consequences are, as women, we have to accept and take responsibility, but they're going to move us forward. Mm. We may not always get the benefit of the parts that we are creating, but we have to create them for the next generation.
Mm. That's so powerful. That is very powerful. So one of the things that I've really noticed about you is how conscious you are about everything that is happening around you and how you're contributing to society. And for me, looking at you, you are absolutely living your legacy. Mm. What does legacy mean to you?
I don't know. I just think anything and everybody you touch, you know, because if you touch something... I was actually given an example with the graduation which we had with the mentees about the butterfly effect, that a butterfly flipping its wings can impact whether can impact anything around the world. Mm. So you do not know how you're impacting and who you're impacting, and it's not for you to know. It's none of your business. Mm. what is important in terms of your legacy is how you show up in the world every day. For me, it is important that I do not hurt people, that I'm consciously not hurting somebody. And if I do, know that that's not my intention. My conscious is to, conscious way of living is to awaken what's in you. I don't assume to know better than you. But if you are doing something that's destructive, so for one thing, I'm very passionate about South Africa. I'm very passionate about the image that we project in the world. I'm very passionate about the way we post on social media, even on WhatsApp. So if somebody sends me something, sometimes I'll go back to them and say, you are forwarding that. You are impacting our image, how we are received in the world. And you are impacting your children. And most of the time, it's people who do have children. It's like, we can't all live this country. We love this country. We're not going to be going to Australia, nor am I looking at moving to the U.S. with the white Afrikaner farmers. And we have a beautiful country.
I love it.
Physically and with the human beings. So the legacy that I am consciously building is for human beings to understand that we are all connected, that we are all one, that we are, should be, we not are, we should be driven by love, and that this is an illusion. The skin we're in is an illusion. Don't be fooled by that. Because when we go into the earth, we become dust. So what are the things that we should be concentrating on? There is nobody superior. There's nobody inferior. We are just different.
I love that. I really love that. Dudu, is leadership lonely?
No.
How have you managed to make it not lonely? Because we hear about people saying how it's lonely at the top. How, you know, the more they get to do in terms or grow, the less access they have of support or people that you can trust. How have you managed to make this different?
Because leadership is not a position, it's relationships. So if you understand that, and you would know that a lot of my work is in personal leadership, and it, most people get confused by that. If I'm not able to lead myself, how dare I think I have a right
to lead others?
To lead others. But that's just position and title. So a lot of my focus is around the human being. Most times, if you are not full inside, if you are not whole, you will act out in a leadership position, which is why you will start feeling like it's lonely, because you step on people to get there. You create a lot of boundaries around yourself. So what I always encourage people to do, which is part of why I do the mentoring, is by the time you get to the C-suite, you must have worked on your inside and understand that you project what is inside in, onto the world, so that by the time you get to those positions, you have created networks, you have created goodwill, and you will never be lonely.
So everything is about people.
Yes,
and
it's connections.
It's connections, it's people. And
connections, not in the way of using people, because sometimes connections is that.
But connecting with another human being from a human perspective and building a relationship. So what I'm hearing is these things are self-imposed.
Powerful. This is the powerful thing.
It's self-imposed. Wow, that is an interesting and amazing way to look at it. Very interesting. Dudu, you have run how many podcasts? Many, over 80? And you have listened to amazing people talking about...
Don't ask me to choose any of my babies.
No. I was one of the people interviewed, so I wouldn't dare ask that question. But you've heard so much, right? You know, you have listened to people telling you about, you know, amazing lessons and wisdoms. What is that one big lesson that either it's been repeated over and over, or it was so profound that you were blown away? and it's impacted your journey thus far?
I must say I'm not so much impacted in that sense.
Mm.
When I observe the people I interview, I am so grateful that they're able to meet life where it is and evolve with it.
Yeah.
So each one of them, part of why I invite people is because I have either noticed something and I have seen how they've evolved. And part of what I try and do is get them to share those examples of what it is. So I'm not really blown away by many things in life because by the time I invite you, I know how you're going to reveal your journey.
Mm.
So it's more the enjoyment.
Mm.
It's like I really am loving when I meet someone. We were at Exclusive Books once upon a time with one of my mentees, and we were trying to buy a book, and then she looks at me, she says, "You look familiar." So I'm like, "I don't know." And then she says, "Where do I know you from?" I'm like, "Wisdom personified."
Mm.
That for me.
Yeah.
Because whatever it is we're doing around this table is touching them and helping them evolve to the next level. The one that was memorable for me, if that's the question,
yes.
Dr. Renate Volpea, sometimes I pronounce it wrong, amazing,
yeah.
Who reveals such, I mean, her journey as a child, her relationship with her parents, and her relationship with an abusive husband, I was blown away. And that is what I would like human beings to do, that this facade that we create, that a powerful woman like this could be on this platform and share with other women, that imagine what I have been through and you are meeting me in boardrooms and I was walking around with this provider, look what I was going through, so that we don't do the same. For me, that was such a gift from her to allow herself to be that vulnerable. And I always invite people who want to be part of this, if you would like to share situations like this. And it's not always about negative things. Mm. It's also about positive. But be vulnerable. This whole facade that we walk around with, for me, it's just so superficial and it doesn't lead us anywhere. We can only be better human beings and a better country and a better world if we strive to be better, but also just to be more open with each other.
Yeah. My last question, Dudu, is about your journey in this life where you do not have children. You have not married. Well, have you? As far as I know, not yet.
No.
And we know how our African societies are when it comes to issues like that. But also, I know I have sat in so many rooms and have heard conversations with women where, you know, we wear our badges of being a wife or being a mother, you know, as the thing, the most important accomplishment. And it is. I'm not saying that it's not.
Mm.
But how have you navigated your life, you know?
Especially with the mother who, the one thing she always said to me, she says, who at 10, 11 says, why should we bring another human into this world when there are already children in this world who need love? She said, how dare you, as a 10 or 11-year-old, tell me that? So she believes that I consciously. I used to say the reason why is I want a loving relationship through which to bring a child, because the privilege of having been brought up by my father, I don't think I can ever emphasize what it's like to be brought up and be loved by two parents. There were times where you felt suffocated, but you just felt so much love. And there's no way I wanted to deprive my child of that. But I also realized that it was just not my path, because I know if I wanted one, I would have. You freeze eggs, we do
there's
things.
Many ways,
it was just not my path. But the thing with, about being Dudum Somi is I'm very clear that the image of Dudu is not determined by what other human beings say. Because ultimately, I'm on my own. In my own quiet way and in my own inner voice, I need to be comfortable with the decisions I make. So there is nothing another human being can say that can ever hurt me, make me feel less than. So that I've been clear about even as a child. So I appreciate that we all have different parts. And I always say, if we are all supposed to have identical parts, then what is the point of having 7 billion people in the world? Mm. We are supposed to have different experiences. My experience is to find out how I can love other human beings without having a condition of being related by blood.
I love that. I did say that was my last question, but here is my real last question. Yeah. What is love?
Yeah. I just think it is the idea of, like, holding people to this place of it's like a treasure, you know? Like, it's a treasure. It's a place of not wanting somebody to be hurt. I'll go back to that over and over. It's like being protective. It's like making them feel warmth. It's like making them feel joy. And also, because pain is also part of love, is understanding that through pain, it's a part of evolution, yeah? That even though there is pain, is the love part is which part of me is growing to which direction and how can I be better for that. So it's something so precious to me, and it is so exciting that I honestly don't understand how hate is possible. That baffles me. It's very few times in my life I've ever used that word because even when I say the character of this person I don't like, I can't understand the word hate.
I love that. And love is the oil that we need to become the leaders and the people that we need to lead this continent and this world.
It's our breath. Without love, we die.
Wow. That is so powerful. And what a way to end our conversation, because that's exactly the wisdom that I needed, that we needed from you today. Thank you so much, Dudu.
What an honor. Thank you so much for the privilege.
The most powerful leaders don't leave footprints in the sand. They leave roots in the soil. What an extraordinary conversation. To hear Dudu Msomi not just as a strategist or speaker, but as a woman, as a daughter, as a sister, as a soul fully present in her purpose. This was more than a story. It was a revelation. Dudu, thank you for your honesty, for your insight, for your stillness, for showing us that leadership isn't about noise or performance. It's about presence. It's about clarity. It's about choosing to live a life so intentional that it echoes even when you're no longer in the room. To everyone watching and listening, I hope this conversation stirred something in you, a reminder to lead from within, to choose depth over display, to build a legacy rooted not in applause, but in alignment. From our very first meeting in 2010 to this unforgettable moment right now, Dudu, you remain a lighthouse. Steady, subtle, seen. Until next time on another episode of Wisdom Personified, Conversations with Dudu Msomi, stay rooted, keep rising, and carry on walking in wisdom.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Wisdom Personified, Conversations with Dudu Msomi. Please also like, follow and subscribe to our channel and share the wisdom with your friends. I would love it if you could rate and review as well. Wisdom Personified, Conversations with Dudum Somi, is also available on YouTube, Facebook Watch, Apple, and Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify. Enjoy the wisdom journey.